You're tuned in to the Grace Curley Show podcast. Listen to Grace live daily before Howie's show. For station and time, go to gracecurlyshow.com. Enjoy.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
Hey, it's not the Howie Carr Show. It's my show. And I brought my own music.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith. The last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. The Archduchess of the AM airwaves. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Get ready, Boston. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. We are in the second hour of our Friday show. Big fan of Fridays, especially after a week like this. I am ready to get home, make a cocktail, delete the Twitter app for 2 days, watch some Netflix maybe, watch a movie, and just zone out. But before we do that, we're going to finish off strong here. And I think it is worth calling out the mainstream media for this ridiculous double standard that we're seeing. And if you guys ever feel like no one's doing it, I assure you a lot of these conservative sites are, whether it's The Federalist or Red State or Town Hall, people are writing amazing pieces. A lot of people who aren't Trump's biggest fans are still saying, we have to address the elephant in the room here, which is for months and months and months, no one seemed to care about violence, or as they called it, unrest. And there was a thread today on Twitter, and it did my work for me. It just had all of the videos of all of these occasions where the media could have condemned what was happening and, you know, could have stood up for small business owners whose storefronts were being burned down. But they didn't. They took a pass. They decided to go soft on the rioters, and that needs to be mentioned because I don't want people to start feeling like they're taking crazy pills. I don't want people to start feeling like, am I alone in this? We just saw this for months and no one said anything and it was all okay. Because both are wrong. But we have to call out both. That is part of the media's job. That is why they have a 9% approval rating right now from the American public. Because they're transparently corrupt and they can't be trusted and they don't cover things fairly. They cover things, they push a narrative that they want. And then when the narrative comes true, like it did when those crazy people stormed the Capitol, they run with that. But anything else, and we had a guest on yesterday, Derek Hunter, and he put it really well. Anything that does not hurt Donald Trump is not reported and it's not newsworthy. And these are perfect examples. We're going to go through them all right now. So, Jared, get ready, because we're going to run through some sound. I want to start with people who were using inflammatory rhetoric, because there's a lot of talk now about, you know, Trump incited this, and he didn't say enough to quell the anger, and he instigated it. And I just want to flash back here to a few times where I felt that the rhetoric was inappropriate, but I didn't hear the mainstream media really call anyone out. Let's start with Maxine Waters. I remember this. She had a crowd of people around her, and she was really, really, really supportive of the idea of people confronting politicians that they did not like and that they did not agree with. She wanted people to get in each other's faces. Let's play cut 18.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
Now, this is one I didn't even remember. Eric Holder, a.k.a. Obama's wingman, former AG, said when they go low, he switched up Michelle Obama's saying, which is when they go low, we go high, which after the last four years, we all know is one of the, can we get a fact check from Daniel Dale from CNN?
Seriously.
That is not really a true statement.
Was it the high road yesterday when you wanted to deplatform the president from every social media?
Jared, that's for your safety. Okay.
I keep forgetting. The government has my best interest in mind. How could I forget?
We're worried about you, man. Have some respect. So Eric Holder switched it up, and he was more honest. He said, when they go low, we kick them. This is cut 16.
Michelle always says, Michelle Obama, I love her, you know. She and my wife, like, really tight, which always scares me and Barack. But Michelle always says that, you know, when they go low, we go high. No. When they go low, we kick them.
You can't really fault him for at least being honest. I mean, Michelle Obama saying that when they go low, we go high is just not true. And they do. That is more of, that's more apropos of how they, of how the Democrats operate. Let's do, this is one of my favorites. This was Hillary Clinton because she was asked about civility. And she had a moment of truth. And she really explained how the Democrat mind works and why the swamp was so good for so long and why there was this kind of mutual agreement to have swampiness for so long. This is cut 15.
You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about.
So that is code for we can't be civil when we lose. I know a lot of you guys were civil for 8 years when Obama won. I'm sure he wasn't your favorite candidate if you're listening to this program. He wasn't my favorite president of all time. I was very civil. I was in a theater program at the time. Everyone loved Obama. I didn't say really anything about it. I just went on with my life. In fact, people kind of thought it was cute, I think, that I was Republican. It was like, oh, there's Grace. She's that crazy Republican. God love her. And then when Trump won, I would have not have wanted to be in a liberal arts college when Trump won. Because when the Democrats are not happy, civility is tossed out the window. And that's not really how civility works. It's not one of those things that you can use when it benefits you.
And think about this realistically. In the past 4 years, you know, Trump supporters, have you heard one of them say, hey, if you voted for Joe Biden, you are on the wrong side of history. You are all kinds of ists. You just need to be either put into a re-education camp when it's all done, or you need to be part of a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. No, it's live and let live. Okay, great. We disagree, but we don't want to destroy you. And that's the thing. The left wants to destroy anything they don't like.
Well, I think that was part of what Rick Klein said, which was he since deleted the tweet, but he said something about a cleansing.
Yeah, you have to cleanse Trumpism.
That, to me, does not scream unity. And again, I'll say it again. The people who stormed the Capitol were 1,000% in the wrong. I hope they get the books thrown at them. But where was this horror and this outrage for the last 10 months? That's what I think a lot of people are wondering. A lot of people are saying to themselves, what took you guys so long to get upset? Oh, it's because now this is a group of people and that you don't like. So now you will voice that violence is wrong. But violence is always wrong. It shouldn't matter who's committing the violence. You should not condone it either way. And I want to play this Don Lemon. We haven't played it yet, have we? This is cut 20.
Because this is how the Boston Tea Party rioting. So do not get it twisted and think that, oh, this is something that has not never happened before. And then this is so terrible. And where are we and these savages and all of that? This is how this country was started.
So there's a great piece out right now, and it's called Black Lives Matter Boomerang, How Media Flipped Script on Violent Protests After Capitol Riot. And this is not anecdotal evidence. This is real stuff that happened. And part of it that's really amazing is that a lot of these publications started changing how they described these riots. The Associated Press argued that focusing on rioting and property destruction rather than underlying grievance has been used in past to stigmatize broad swaths of people, protesting against lynching, police brutality, or for racial justice going back. And so they changed it. They said unrest is a vaguer, milder, and less emotional term for a condition of angry discontent and protesting. So in other words, they softened up because they believed in the movement. A riot is a riot is a riot is a riot. That's it. And this is part of the problem with changing language. It's Orwellian. It's doublespeak. If someone is setting your business on fire and Craig Melvin is telling you that it's mostly peaceful, that is not true. And you should believe your own eyes before you believe any chyrons on CNN. We're going to get to more of this. We have a great guest at 1:30, Susan Ferriccio from the Washington Examiner. I'm so excited to talk to her. She's a tough cookie. She really took on Brian Stelter in a podcast a few months ago, and I never, ever forgot it because I loved the cut. There's some cuts, Jared, in this biz that you hear and you get goosebumps because it's like finally someone got told what you've been thinking the whole time, and that's what she did to Brian Stelter. My first deal, guys, for the Follins Be Inn sold out right away. Everyone knows how much I love the Follins Be Inn. It's located on the pristine Kezar Lake in North Sutton, New Hampshire. Dennis, who's the innkeeper, has put so much love and attention into the design of the 17 unique historic guest rooms. This place is quintessential New England. It's so cozy. It's so nice. It's so peaceful. I can't think of a better time in history where people could go and relax a little bit and take their mind off the day-to-day news. This is the place to go. My room was absolutely beautiful. I stayed there. And after I went, I called my parents and I said, you guys have to check this place out. My parents love to walk. They love scenery. They love looking at leaves and stuff. They went. They absolutely loved it. They bought, they got this deal that we ran the other day. So they're going to go back. This time of the year, you can take advantage of Follins Be Inn's snowshoes and discover the beautiful area. Of course, at the end of the day, you'll want to sit in front of the fire and enjoy a nice glass of wine. To reserve your room today, go to FollinsBeInn.com. Excellence is assured. TripAdvisor has awarded the Follins Be Inn their Hall of Fame Award for 2018 and 2019. FollinsBeInn.com, the best of the past. We have a lot more to get to. We actually have Howie sent me this, and I'm so grateful because I called Howie this morning. And I was like, oh, damn, Howie, this has been a heavy week for me, you know, for everybody. But the first week on radio, I was like, ugh. Howie said to me, I got something for you. It's a Hilaria Baldwin type story, and I think it's going to make people feel good. And that's what people need on a Friday, is to feel good. When we get back, guys, we'll cover that and so much more. 844-500-4242. I'm Grace Curley, and this is The Grace Curley Show.
She's never held office, but she paid the Whiskey Priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop any from reporting the Mueller and the dossier and all that stuff.
I know you're bitter. Now, I understand that you have a lot of resentment about it.
Now we have ethics. Okay, now we have ethics.
Don't you dare act like newsrooms didn't have ethics in 2017 and 2018.
Well, I know they did. So, well, you can don't dare me all you want, Brian. I've been doing this for 30 years. So say whatever you want. It's my view. And I have a right to say it.
Oh, I'm so excited that we're having her on at 1:30. She's awesome. Susan Ferriccio. She's the chief congressional correspondent for the Washington Examiner. She's not holding back. And she has a great piece out right now about the centrist moderates that are in D.C. And we will get to that in the next segment. Today's poll question is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, holding up in my hand right now, the air purifier. I love it for my basement to get out the damp smell. Take advantage of their New Year sale. Go to EdenPure.com and put in code GRACE to save $10 and get free shipping. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Should Donald Trump go to the inauguration on January 20th?
No. And if you saw his tweet, he is not going.
Yes.
He said for all of you guys asking.
82% say, heck no, he should not go.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, if he were the type of guy who was all about being presidential, I would say go, but he's not. I mean, it's not the type of thing where, you know, oh, I'm going to be the bigger person and go. I mean, that ship has definitely sailed, I think, over the last couple of months. So, no, I don't think he should. Guys, we have a lot to talk about here, and I was just playing some sound. I want to continue with it. If anyone wants to call in and talk about this double standard in the mainstream media or anything, how they feel about big tech trying to take Trump off Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, you can call in at 844-500-4242. I'd love to hear what you guys think. Let's keep playing some of these. I want to now go to the Cory Booker flashback, because Spartacus, he was very loud at one point, and he was loud during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. That's when he became Spartacus, actually. Let's do cut 14.
Before I end, that's my call to action here. Please don't just come here today and then go home. Go to the Hill today. Get up and please get up in the face of some congresspeople.
I didn't hear him say peacefully get up in the face of some congresspeople. Luckily, not a lot of people listen to Cory Booker, so nothing happened. But I'm just saying.
What about his rhetoric and his role in the Capitol insurrection?
It was pretty insightful. Let's also play a little bit of Joaquin Castro. Guys, you'll notice these are all people who ran for president, and that's probably why you haven't heard from them in a while. This is cut 17.
If he does that, we'll file a motion or a resolution of disapproval in the Congress right away and ask for a vote on it. We'll also fight him and challenge him in every way that we can in the Congress, in the courts, and in the streets in protest.
And I'm just playing politicians who have said things like this. But if you go to the actual media, I mean, whether it's Donnie Deutsch or any of those people, people have talked about punching Trump. You know, they haven't been the most peaceful group of people for the last 4 years. And we've said it 1,000 times, guys. And if you're sick of hearing me say it, I'm sorry, but it's how I feel. And I am going to keep saying it. We do not condone what happened. We are not hypocrites. We condemn violence when it happens. I only wish the media had done that this past summer and had been a little bit more honest with people instead of trying to smooth out and glorify this movement and, you know, raise money for bail for these people who are setting fire to buildings. Maybe they'd have a leg to stand on. I'll hear from people. Someone wrote this on Twitter. Someone said, if you condemned violence in the summer of love that we just had, and you're condemning it now, you are someone who I want to talk to. Otherwise, we're good. We don't need to hear from you. Now, of course, anyone can talk about whatever they want, but that's how I feel. Why am I getting lectured about this from Chris Cuomo, who threatens to throw people down the stairs when they call him Fredo? It doesn't add up for me. We got a lot of people on the line right now. Let's go to Mike. Mike, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, what's up, Grace? I was brought up on the Howie Carr show. Okay, so I'm not somebody that is automatically opposed to your line of thinking. But I have to ask you, and I've never called into Howie because I can't really listen to him anymore. But at what point do you have to draw the line? And I know there's the mainstream media, and I by and large I agree with all that stuff. At what point are you just going to agree that, like, enough is enough and Trump is insane? Like, he blew the election. He could have won. The guy doesn't have a disciplined bone in his body. And I just, like, have never, ever heard from you or Howie that, like, enough is enough.
I mean, the election's over. Trump has conceded. I'm a Trump supporter. I don't know what to say to that. I mean, I feel as though he did a lot of good things in 4 years. I voted for him. And as far as wanting me to say Trump's insane, I'm not going to say that. You can turn on CNN and MSNBC. You'll get that all day long if that's, like, what you're craving. If you need someone to tell you that. If you need more brave people to tell you how bad Donald Trump is and how much they hate Donald Trump and how evil he is and how dumb he is and how much of an idiot he is, you can find that in a lot of places. I'm not one of those brave souls who hates Donald Trump and thinks that everything he does is bad. You will not find that here. I'm sorry to disappoint you. This is the Grace Curley Show. This is how I feel. And I don't hate him. And I don't think he blew the election. I think 73 million people voted for him.
And just because you supported President Trump doesn't mean during the bad time you have to admit what other people think is their view of him. I mean, that's totalitarian thinking. You know, it's what they're trying to do. All Trump supporters are this. Well, you're a Trump supporter. Why won't you admit he's insane? Because we're under no obligation to do that.
Yeah, I don't have to admit anything. I mean, you can go to any show you want and you'll hear that over and over and over again. Like, nonstop. But not here, my friend. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. I'm so excited about our next guest. I'm not even going to wait to get into it. Susan Ferriccio is the chief congressional correspondent for the Washington Examiner. She has amazing tweets, but more importantly, she has amazing columns. One of them is out today, and I want to ask her about it. Susan, thank you so much for joining us.
Good afternoon.
The first thing I want to ask you, you wrote a piece today, and I'm going to tweet it out for everyone. It's called Meet the Senate's New Power Players, Centrist Democrats. And I heard a lot about this in regards to Joe Manchin. He had said that there's some things he's not going to go along to get along with. Do you have faith in these, I think it's five centrist Democrats who claim that they're going to stand their ground and not bow to the more radical leftists in their party?
Well, I think it depends on the legislation. So if the Senate were to bring up a measure right away when Democrats take over this month and it said, let's get rid of this filibuster, which is the 60-vote threshold, I don't think you would find support for it. I don't think it would pass because Manchin has already said he's not going to support it. They have only a bare majority, so you would need everybody on board, and then, of course, the vice president as the swing vote, and that's going to be Kamala Harris. So what I think might happen is that they will be asked about it, and I'll be pressured about it when the Senate tries to pass something that everybody likes, that everybody wants to pass. Now, that's a harder thing to do because, of course, they're not, you know, a big unified group when it comes to the agenda. We know there are very liberal members who want to push for things regarding Medicare for all, climate change, maybe packing the Supreme Court. There are all kinds of things that some Democrats may want, others may not want. So I don't think something like that is going to end the filibuster, but there could be something with more common ground. It could be something having to do with health care. It could be something having to do with new coronavirus relief aid, depending on how all that folds in America, the need for more aid. It would depend on the issue, and you'd have to find something that everybody felt there was a compelling need to pass over Republican objections. Otherwise, right now, the appetite is not there, even though the country is really, you know, hurting right now, obviously. I just don't think Democrats are ready to give up the filibuster, at least a small group of them, but enough to stop that from happening.
Susan, on a similar vein, we can sense a lot of the Republican senators are coming under a lot of pressure from Trump supporters who feel that they're not sticking by the president. Do you see a lot of people getting primaried who have not been primaried in the past?
Well, I think it depends what happens right now. There's a very strange thing going on there where they're actually considering a second impeachment of President Trump. You know, that's going to be a tricky territory for Republicans because, of course, there's some of them who say they would go along with that. They have been increasingly opposed to President Trump, and that's really possible that some would support an impeachment effort. But there are others who see that as really dangerous. One of the reasons is Trump has, you know, a huge base of supporters. And yes, he didn't win the election, and I'm sure he's probably going to lose some support after this past week, but I think he's still going to have a pretty solid base of supporters. And Republicans don't want those supporters to turn against them because their party needs them to survive.
Right. And, Susan, to your point, this is from Speaker Pelosi today. She said she talked about how she talked to Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to discuss available precautions for preventing an unstable president from initiating military hostilities or accessing the launch codes and ordering a nuclear strike. Are you surprised? Because they talked so much about wanting to unify the country and wanting to move on. And I think there's, 13 days left of Trump's presidency, and they're still going to try this again?
That's right. And I think really the motive here is to stop him from ever running again. What they would like is to prevent a president Trump 2024. And that the way to do it is to impeach him, because the impeachment articles would prevent him from taking higher office ever again in the Constitution. It's laid out. So that's the motive here. And of course, there's a second motive, too. There's always political motives involved, obviously. And this is to put the pressure on Republicans. Look, what are they going to do? Are they going to vote against impeachment in a week that saw, you know, the Capitol taken over after Trump gave us, you know, they're all connecting the riots to Trump. And now you would put Republicans on the spot. Would they be, you know, repudiating the president with impeachment? Would they be supporting the president by voting against it? It's a tough vote for them. They would certainly alienate a lot of Trump voters by voting for impeachment. So it really puts them in an incredibly precarious situation politically. Both parties like to do that to each other. This is an opportunity for Democrats, while Republicans are down, to really kind of go for the jugular.
Yeah.
And that's what this would really be if they take up impeachment. Now, just a little while ago, they were talking on the phone, Democrats, about how to move forward. They're pressuring Vice President Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment and try to get rid of Trump through that means. I don't sense that there was a lot of appetite for that from the cabinet. Well, now you have Democrats saying, then we're going to go move ourselves to do it next week. So that's kind of where things are dangling right now. The possibility of impeachment moving through the House next week, in which case the Senate would have to take it up. Now, we don't know how they would move on that. Would they reconvene? They're not in next week. Would they say, we'll just wait till the 20th and the new majority run by Democrats can handle it? President will be out of office. You know, what happens then? It's really, there's a lot of uncertainty right now, but what there is certainty about is that Democrats in the House are saying, we got to impeach him. There's a huge appetite for that, and that is what the Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, is dealing with.
Now, Susan, our connection with you right now on the phone is not great, but I do want to ask you one more question. You have never shied away from calling out the mainstream media's double standards. We played your cut with Brian Stelter earlier, mm-hmm. where you called him out after, you know, he was saying, how can you question the media's integrity? And you said, I'll question it all I want. And I think you spoke for a lot of Americans when you said that. Are you surprised at the lack of self-awareness right now with the media and how they're covering this riot? We've condemned it on the show multiple times, but there does seem to be a double standard over what's a protest and what's a riot. The riots only seem to be when it's Trump supporters, and the protests are when it's Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I don't think we should have this double standard. I think we need to be really careful about how we cover riots, how we cover looting, how we cover people dying in these incidents. And you need to be fair. You need to be impartial and look at it all kind of dispassionately. I've been posting all kinds of things about what was going on in the Capitol and what the protesters were telling me. And I think we need to do the same. We need to look at the rioting that took place this summer, the rioting that caused so much destruction and death and violence. And looking ahead, maybe this will force everybody in the media to look at those kinds of incidents with the same, you know, critical eye. And I hope that we in the conservative media will call them out when they don't.
And Susan, I noticed that because I follow you on Twitter and you were tweeting, you know, what people saw, and you weren't really embellishing anything. You weren't really putting your own personal spin on it. A lot of your tweets were just, you know, retweeting something and saying, this is what I hear. And you were getting a lot of pushback from people who were saying, well, you should be condemning it, or you're lying. And you were kind of just saying, I'm trying to look at this, like you said, dispassionately.
I just wanted to know why people would barge into the Capitol and break windows. And if I lecture them, what are they going to tell me? That's not a story. It's not hearing why people are doing what they're doing. When we covered the riots over the summer, there were plenty of interviews with people who felt they needed to explain why they were looting, why they were burning down buildings. They got a lot of press time. They got a lot of air time. We got to hear what their point of view was. And it sounds kind of odd to say, why air the grievances of people who cause violence? But the people I talked to said that they were there for not to break down, you know, the Capitol, but to send a message to lawmakers, and they felt they had a right to be there. And if I stand there and lecture them or try to write the story in a way that's from my point of view, I don't think that does a very good service to journalism. I think people need to see it and decide for themselves. And if you look at my Twitter feed, you see people commenting on it, saying what they think of these protesters. And that's fine. I I'm open to whatever anyone has to say to me on Twitter, but I'm not going to change the way I interview people, which is just to, you know, as I said on Twitter, I've interviewed murderers, I've interviewed corrupt politicians, I've interviewed all kinds of people, and it's part of the job. And I think that's, it's part of what our job is just to let people see for themselves and make the judgment, make gasp at what they say, get angry. That's the job. And, you know, we certainly did that with the rioting this summer. We gave people a chance to say why they were acting the way they were. And I think that was the job that of journalists, too, over these past few days with what was going on in Washington.
Now, Susan, before I let you go, I just want to ask. So you did tell us that the next couple of weeks are going to be very unsure and unpredictable as of what the Senate and the Congress and everyone is going to decide to do about Trump. If you had to guess, do you think that he will be impeached?
That's a really good question. They certainly seem to be headed that way in the House. They don't have a lot of time, 12 days, unless they want to do a post-office impeachment, which is legally questionable. So they would have to do it now if they wanted to do it toward early next week. And I don't know, I'm still going with 50-50 here. And I know that's not a great, you know, help to people to understand what's going on. But there's a lot of enthusiasm amongst Democrats to push him out immediately. And, you know, the problem is timing. And what's the Senate going to do? You can impeach the president. I mean, they could do that in a vote pretty easily. They have the majority in the Senate. And it only takes 51 votes. But if you were to convict a president and remove him from office, which is also the goal, then that requires a supermajority in the Senate. So you'd have to really dip into some of the real stalwart Republicans to try to get that through the Senate and remove him and make it impossible for him to run again. I don't know if that support is there because Republicans are saying, hey, look, he's out of here in a few days.
Right.
Let's just leave it. That's why I say 50-50. So I'm not sure.
Susan, thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope you come on again. Where can everyone find you on Twitter and where can they read your stuff?
Oh, you can find my stuff at Washington Examiner, and you can find my Twitter feed at Susan Ferriccio on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Susan. That's Ferriccio, Susan Ferriccio. She's awesome. She tells you how it is, which is we need more reporting like that. Guys, when we get back, we have more to talk about. We have more cuts to play, and I'm excited because in the 2 o'clock hour, we're going to have Holly Robichaud. And she's great because she's going to tell us local news, but she's also going to tell us her thoughts on this past week of riots and unrest. My friends at Eden Pure have done it again. Starting today, you can get the Thunderstorm air purifier at the lowest price offered to my listeners. With code word GRACE, the Thunderstorm is available for under $90 and shipping is free. This New Year sale is for 1 week only and while supplies last. That's the key because they run out fast. The Thunderstorm is a small device. You can hold it in your hand. I'm doing that right now for the YouTube stream. You can plug it into the wall to purify the air from any odor. This could be pet odor, kitchen smells, tobacco, or that damp smell you may have in your basement. No filters are needed. And units, if you try to get something like this, a lot of them run for like $600. It's pretty wild. We love them here in the office to fight Howie's fish cooking smells in the microwave. Nauset Beach Inn loves them so much, they put one in every single room. The Thunderstorm doesn't take up any floor space, and my favorite part is it's very, very quiet. Take advantage of this one-week-only sale. Experience it for yourself what all the listeners, Howie, and the advertisers are all raving about. Go to EdenPure.com and put in code word GRACE. That's EdenPure.com, code word GRACE. Shipping is free. We will be right back, everyone, for this Friday show. It's The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
Welcome back, everyone. Happy Friday. We all deserve a break from this ridiculous news cycle. I want to open up the phone lines, 844-500-4242. Call in if you have something to say. This is The Grace Curley Show. We are open to all opinions. Even if you don't agree with me, that's cool, too. I wanted to read a little bit here from a story I saw in The Federalist. It's Margot Cleveland, and I'm just going to read a few excerpts from it. She said the pressure to shut up about election integrity will be strong, with those daring to speak up shamed and blamed. What happened in D.C. on January 6, 2021, however, did not erase the problems with the 2020 election. And Trump's rhetoric, hyperbole, and unsupported claims of election fraud do not diminish the legitimacy of concerns over voting irregularities, including, yes, claims made by Trump's lawyers and litigation. Just as our nation's capital deserves defending, so too does our right to a free and fair election. That is where I stand on this, which is I don't think the two things have to, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I don't think you cannot condemn what happened. I think you can. And I think you can also say, but I still want to talk about the election and going forward. I think it's more of a conversation about the future. How do we restore people's faith in democracy who do feel, whether it's true or not true, who feel as though they got cheated? That's not how you want a country to feel.
You notice all the claims are, unsupported claims.
Debunked.
Debunked, yeah. No, unsupported and underreported does not mean the claims aren't there.
I mean, and let's be real, Hunter Biden, those claims were unsupported and debunked until like 3 days after the election.
Right.
So are we going to find out in 15 days?
I'm sure once the Trump is cleansed from America, that's funny. It looks like there was some wackiness with the machines. Our bad.
Well, we're already seeing that a lot, too, with stories that now they're not afraid to kind of come forward with and say, oh, maybe there was some shadiness there, or maybe. And I keep referring to Hunter Biden, but that was a huge story. And there was a lot of evidence to support the story, including a laptop that he left at a repair shop. And they claimed it was Russian disinformation for about a month until it suited their narrative. The media, and we had Susan Ferriccio on in the last segment, and she's a real journalist, and she's someone who really is trying to, you know, have accurate reporting. But only reporting on things that you think hurt one political candidate, Donald J. Trump, is not reporting. That's storytelling. That's pushing a narrative. And that's what we've been seeing. And it's going to stop in 15 days. And because they're going to have to get back to kind of pretending to care about journalism, pretending to care about, you know, if Biden's doing the right thing. They're going to be upset that he's not, you know, taking their questions, and they're going to expect us to feel bad for them when he comes out and doesn't take any questions, or when Kamala comes out and doesn't take any questions. And we're not going to, because they didn't demand he answer questions when he was running for president. So why would he answer them now? I don't blame him. I wouldn't answer any questions either. If I became president and didn't have to answer any questions about my son, who was working with Chinese businesses and making millions of dollars, who received a 2.8 carat diamond from a Chinese businessman while I was vice president. And then I still became president throughout all of that. Do you think I would get up there and say, you know what? Now I'm going to take a question from Peter Ducey. Go ahead, you one horse face trick pony soldier. No, I would not. I'd be like, no, I'm riding this thing for 4 years. I'm not going to take a question from anybody. And you can't really blame him. I mean, I think that when I have to put my frustration about a lot of the division, it does come down to the media. And even today, I think it was John Berman. He reported that the Trumps were watching the Capitol riots, and they were kind of like celebrating, and it was before any of the rioting started. So it was blatantly fake news, and it was just to rile up his base and to say, look at how evil Trump is. He was dancing to Gloria while all this was happening. And again, it was not real, but it was working in his advantage. And maybe he issued a correction in the last few hours that no one's going
to
see.
I have yet to see one.
But it's all to push their narrative. I don't have to tell you guys that. You know it. We got some people on the line who want to talk, and we will take your calls in the 2 o'clock hour, 844-500-4242. This is The Grace Curley Show.